You're listening to a podcast from 702.
All right, let's focus on the State Capture Commission now. Do you know what would be happening right now at the inquiry at this moment? Former President Jacob Zuma would be on the stand because he was issued with a subpoena to appear from today until the 22nd. But he's not. And he believes he's not obliged to appear and answer questions until his legal challenge for the Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo's refusal to recuse himself is resolved. And until the Constitutional Court has also ruled on the inquiry's application to compel him to take a stand. I want us to focus on the significance of this moment. I don't want us to take it for granted. Here is a former president who has, for the second time, defied summons, constituting a criminal offense. Let's look at why this is unprecedented and take it a step further and ask, beyond what is there as a legal recourse, what should happen to a former president who openly defies a commission that is mandated to investigate his administration in a country that is founded on constitutional supremacy and equality before the law? Is such a former president also worthy of the official status of former presidents and the benefits that come with that? Give me your thoughts on 011-883-0702. The SMS line is 31702. On WhatsApp, 072-702-1702. Let's first bring in Karen Mon, who's a legal journalist at News 24. Karen, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Clement.
So these arguments that Jacob Zuma is putting forward, he's made them before, before the inquiry. And what they demonstrate, Karen, I think, is that they demonstrate what he's demonstrated in other legal matters too. He will use everything in his disposal to delay or avoid appearing at the commission. But does the subpoena issued against him stand, regardless of the matters before the courts?
Well, that is the position that the inquiry secretary stated to Jacob Zuma's lawyer, to Jacob Zuma himself directly last week, Monday, literally saying, in exactly those terms, just because there's a constitutional court case in which the inquiry is trying to enforce those to silence, etc., does not mean that you are that subpoena is not legally binding on you, because it hasn't been set aside, it's not been withdrawn, and it's still a legally sound subpoena, and therefore you need to appear. But we know that is not the position that his lawyers have taken, and they have simply informed the inquiry last week that he's not going to appear today, which seems to have been what has happened.
But doesn't his legal team have a point, Karen, in that it's the commission that approached the Constitutional Court on an urgent basis to compel Zuma to comply with the summons? So the least the inquiry can do is wait for the guidance from the Concord.
I think the material issue here is that, you know, it's not just about the subpoena. If it was simply about the subpoena, we could have a debate about that. But it's also about his right to remain silent. The inquiry is seeking a variety of orders, basically saying that he's constitutionally mandated as a former head of state to account to the public about the decisions that he made. That's one aspect of the case. But also it's about compelling him to answer questions, saying that he cannot invoke a right to remain silent. That's something that exists within the ambit of criminal law. He can exercise a privilege against self-incrimination, but in very limited circumstances. And they want the court also to make a decision about whether or not his walkout of the inquiry amounted to open contempt of the process. We know, of course, the inquiry's laid criminal charges in that regard. So it is a complex case. And I think Zuma's lawyers on some level are correct to say, you know, because of this issue around right to remain silent and what the Concord's decision with regard to that might be, you know, he would be within his rights to say, well, there must be finality on that. Of course, the inquiry saying that despite all of that, you still needed to honor the subpoena and you still needed to appear, even if it was simply to postpone.
So what's next? What position is the State Capture Commission taking? Because his defiance today constitutes a criminal offense, the second at the commission.
Well, this is the argument that they have made. But, I mean, what's going to be interesting is when the rubber hits the road, is the inquiry, in fact, going to then lay charges of contempt with the police? Because they've done that in regard to the walkout. I am not entirely sure that they will do so in regards to this particular matter because there is an outstanding constitutional court judgment. Jacob Zuma has also said, well, because I'm challenging the decision by the DCJ not to recuse himself, that also prevents me from ever giving evidence until that case is resolved and appealed. That is an unsustainable argument because he hasn't sought to interdict the implementation of the subpoena, and that case could drag on for years, and the inquiry simply has until March 31st in order to get all the evidence it needs. But this issue of the outstanding constitutional court judgment, I think, is a pertinent issue, and it is one that needs to be addressed, because this right to remain silent, I think, is going to be pivotal to any future situation in which we see Jacob Zuma in that inquiry, if and when that actually does happen.
How significant is his defiance today, Karen? I mean, this makes the former president the second South African head of state to defy a subpoena issued against him by a commission after P.W. Botha.
P.W. Botha in 1997, refused to honor TRC subpoena to appear before it, specifically in relation to the activities of the State Security Council, which was a body of very high-ranking ministers that were, in the case of the Craddock 4, appeared to be linked to the state-sanctioned murder of anti-apartheid activists. He simply refused. I think there were three subpoenas issued. He was convicted of contempt, but subsequently successfully overturned that in the Cape High Court. And one of the great tragedies of our current democracy is the activities of high levels of the apartheid state in the very goal-directed murders of activists like Griffith Mlenge, Victoria Mlenge, Fort Galata, Matthew Goniwe, Uncle Potse Tiro, the list goes on and on, was never fully addressed because of that head of state's failure to account for those particular activities. I mean, we're now in a democracy. It's a very different environment. Jacob Zuma is essentially being asked to address allegations that his administration was essentially allowing a parallel administration to capture large aspects of the state. But still, that underlying thing about accountability and about the hopeful expectation that South Africans have that in a democracy, we do get those answers that we didn't get in apartheid.
Yeah. Karen Mont, thank you so much for your time. Legal journalist at News 24. Let's bring in Mklebisi Ndletjana now, the professor. So as expected, Prof, he did not show up today. The inquiry will lodge a second criminal charge of contempt against him. This is a former president behaving like this, openly defying a commission mandated to investigate his administration in a country founded on constitutional supremacy and equality before the law. So is Jacob Zuma worthy of the official status of former presidents and the benefits that come with that, Prof?
Well, he's not. I mean, as I wrote in that article on News 24 on Saturday, that office has certain expectations from its occupants. They are expected to act in a presidential manner to help with national issues, national cause, to strengthen our democracy, to uphold the law. That is why they are given a salary, or rather a pension, that is almost the same as a president. They are given logistical support to open an office, to travel, to do all sorts of things, because we expect them to continue in that presidential role. And we also expect them to maintain the dignity of their previous office. And so, if you provide that person with all those benefits, expecting that they would live up to their presidential responsibilities, and yet they don't. Mm. So the logical thing to do is to reconsider if that person is still worth of getting all those benefits. That's really the question I'm asking, and I'm leaning more to saying he's unworthy of them.
Is it not an overreach, though, if we have to go that route? Because there's legal recourse. We have an independent judiciary. Defying summons is a criminal offense that could result in either a fine or a couple of months in prison. So Zuma can be dealt with, through those processes.
Well, there are two things there, I think, Clement, that you are talking about. They are matters of law, where a person violates the law, in which case the court is obliged to consider that. I am talking specifically about the presidency, the post of the former presidency, and the benefits that accrue to that post. That it is governed by a certain convention. I'm not talking about the law here, never mind the law. It is that office is governed by a certain convention. You are it is created specifically for you as a former president to continue in this role of a presidential issues, right? And his predecessors have done that extremely well. Mandela set up the foundation, continued with conciliatory efforts. Thabo Mbeki is prominent in the continent and internationally. Kgalema also has a foundation that looks at formulating policies, bringing together business. And so they have lived up to the expectation of their post-presidency offices, right? So, but Zuma, if you compare, Jacob Zuma has not. So these are two separate issues. It's about the imagery and the status that he continues to enjoy and the benefits related to him being former president.
Well, some may argue, what about F.W. de Klerk? He still enjoys the status of a former president. He may not have defied a summons, but he's continued to deny apartheid. You know, that ruthless, unjustifiable system was a crime against humanity. Should he also not be stripped of that status?
Well, that's a question to raise. Has his conduct, everything that he has said, does it threaten to unravel the strength of our democratic society? Is he acting against the constitutional values? Those are the questions that you must ask. Perhaps we should have a debate on this. I would be willing to participate in that. However, since we are talking about Jacob Zuma here and now, and based on what we have observed in the last few years, my conclusion is that he has debased his office.
I see that, in fact, there's an SMS here of someone who says, well, Zuma is just exercising, you know, his legal options. And some are arguing that this is someone who has made a contribution in the fight against apartheid. He may have made mistakes during his tenure, but some people are arguing, even on the SMS line, that he mostly served this country. So how do you balance that, Prof, if someone has served the country, as this SMS indicates, with someone who is simply not just respecting the rule of law and the constitutional supremacy that this country is founded on? Where is the balance in that?
Nelson Mandela, our saintly figure, was taken to court by Louis Late over a decision he had taken related to rugby. Mandela's lawyers advised him not to go to court or simply write a letter. Mandela said, no, I must go to court to demonstrate the fact that none of us is above the law. A far saintly figure than Jacob Zuma, a worldly admired figure. He recognized that he had to affirm the principles upon which our society is founded, the principle of equality. So the fact that you contributed so much towards the liberation of this country does not absolve you from accountability. We are all equal. Mm. So Jacob Zuma, history will continue to write about him. Songs will be written. Monuments may well be built in his honor. However, he is equal to everybody else. He is not above the law. And in fact, the fact that he is former president, that places an added responsibility on him to uphold the law and promote integrity of our institutions, especially because he is provided with financial benefits and office to do so. And he's not doing that.
I've got an SMS here from a listener. And by the way, if you want to weigh in on this discussion, call me on 011-883-0702. What are your thoughts? Is the former president a worthy recipient of the generosity of the state? I mean, former presidents, you know, their status imposes some obligations which the state is expected to meet. We are paying millions of rands in salary per year and many other benefits. An SMS here, Prof says, Clement, I've listened to Zuma a lot, and the behavior of Jacob Zuma is that of Antichrist. He defies everything of law in life, and the Bible is law. So how we live day to day by honor and integrity, and he's defying that. This is someone on the SMS line, which leads me to this question then, Prof. There's no question that when a president leaves office, you know, the public continues to look up to them, especially if they didn't leave office controversially. They continue to be public figures. But Zuma was basically recalled. You've seen what happened during the 9 years. Are we not asking too much from him?
Well, they were just about to impeach him and he left office. Because he was not impeached legally, he then qualifies for the post-presidential benefits. He was always a controversial figure. And perhaps some people had expectations that in his retirement, he would somewhat uphold the dignity that he, or rather of the office he had occupied. He has nonetheless not done that. He has continued with his defiance behavior, violating the law. And so, you know, we need to ask the question, really, is it still worthy of getting all this presidential treatment?
Let me ask you that question, Prof. Yeah. Do you think it's still worthy? And I know you're putting out there for people to debate it. As Prof. Ndletiana, do you think he's worthy of that status?
Well, I certainly don't. Okay. I mean, as I write in that lengthy article, by the way, which I would encourage people to read, because it explains the history of this office. Going back to 1958, it was really set up to ensure that former presidents, because they are called upon by people to serve all sorts of things, you know, to go make speeches, to answer letters, to take up public causes. So they realized that, that is the U.S. Congress, they realized that they needed to assist their former presidents because some of them don't have the means to fulfill this presidential role, right? So that office is embedded, created upon that contract. So it's a contract, however informal, it's a contract nonetheless, which Jacob Zuma, I'm afraid, has not lived up to.
Prof, thank you so much. I have tweeted that article. If you want to check it out, I've tweeted the link on Twitter. And I want to ask you the question. Do you think that Jacob Zuma just tramples upon everything the status of a former president represents? What do you make of what the prof is putting out there that, look, this is not a man worthy of the status of former president? Professor Mcebisi Ndletiana, professor in political studies at the University of Johannesburg, thank you so much for your contribution and your analysis there. Let's go to the lines now. I want to hear what you have to say. Temba, you're calling from the Johannesburg CBD. Good morning.
How's it, Clement?
I'm all right. How's it?
All right. Bon. Tabaya, professor, opinion to opinion. He can hold that opinion and express it just as he expresses a counter opinion on when you raise the issue of De Klerk. I've got no problem with that. But in the final analysis, whether his opinion is valid or mine and yours is valid or who else's opinion is valid shall be determined by the Constitutional Court or the Court of Law. The Zuma issues are right now before the Constitutional Court. The criminal aspect is right now possessed of by the criminal law enforcement agencies of this country. So no court has. Imagine we take a decision. No one I guess who will decide, or the professor maybe will decide himself. We take a decision that Jacob Zuma must be stripped of his pension. And the matter goes to the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court says there's nothing wrong with Jacob Zuma.
Tamba, let's look at what we know. I hear you that maybe let's allow the matters in court to be concluded first before we can even start about whether or not he has not respected constitutional supremacy and maybe just observed and appreciated that everyone is equal before the law. But let's look at what we know now. He has defied a summons, right? This is the second time.
Wait,
has he not?
Wait a minute. No, there's no ruling on that yet. No court has ruled on that.
Okay, but did he not walk away from the inquiry, Temba?
Well, that does not automatically amount to defiance. The court, that is why he's charged, is to be charged. He must explain why he walked away, whether it was right or not. Then he'll be found to have defied or not defied.
All right.
But we can't just wake up one morning, Mandy Clement, we decide so and so defied. Because right now he's defying everything that this constitution represents. But it's interesting that the professor would not want to play in that area because it's not.
No,
it's
he
not
says a, it's a yeah. He says it's a separate criminal matter. Temba, I did ask the prof. That is it not an overreach to be making this suggestion because there's a legal recourse You know, we've got an independent judiciary. When you defy a summons, that's a criminal offense, and that could be dealt with through the legal processes. As you say, Temba, that let's wait for those processes to be concluded. But that's more of a criminal process. And the prof says, beyond that, over and beyond that, let's look at this person's behavior and ask the question, did he behave in a way that upholds the law, in a way that we expect former presidents to behave, given that we continue to fund their lifestyles and their lives post their presidency? But Temba, I think you raise an important point. Thank you so much, man. Vumani, you're in Springs. What's your view? Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So I agree with the previous caller. Let's not use our hatred for the men to persecute him. Anyways, the first point I'd like to state about President Zuma is that a man of his stature or caliber, I don't think he became president for the perks, you know, of pensions after becoming president and all that. I don't think he went to exile or fought for our freedom just to get the perks one day after he became. I don't think he even knew that he would become president. So he was elected by branches and the people and, basically put there to be president. He didn't, you know, ask or beg people to make him president. People voted for him for two terms, etc. He went to fight the apartheid regime voluntarily, you know, without anybody asking him or whatever. So that's the first point. So,
okay, no, Vumani, sorry, I can't allow you to make the second point because I'm running out of time. But I think you've made your first point. Thank you so much, Vumani, who says this is someone who was voted on, and I would add voted on by ANC members, not necessarily South Africans, who voted for him for two terms. He was voted on by the African National Congress. Of course, he was the head of the campaign. But yeah, that speaks to just our election processes and how presidents of the political parties become presidents of the country.